Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. A change isn't coming. It's here. Artificial intelligence is quickly making inroads in almost every field. It's also making it onto our roads in the form of driverless cars. They signal a shift from human-centered driving to machine intelligence and possibly, eventually, a shift from car ownership to mobility as a service. Those concepts are being tested on the streets of San Francisco, LA, Phoenix, Austin, Atlanta, and a few other cities, and now Charlotte is part of that experiment. Waymo has brought its driverless cars to our town. They're in the testing phase right now, learning our streets, but soon you'll be able to use them as you would a taxi or an Uber. Still, for many, the idea of riding in a car with no driver is a scary prospect. How safe are they? What is the technology behind them? We all know about computer glitches. What might that mean for riders and pedestrians? What is the track record for these autonomous vehicles? And why was Charlotte chosen as the next testing ground? Let's get some answers. We're joined by Sridhar Dugirala. He's an associate professor in the Department of Computer Science at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He is here along with Sahil Desai, senior editor at The Atlantic. And to provide a Queen City perspective of this, Ashley Faze with us. She is managing editor at the Charlotte Ledger. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here.
Welcome. Morning, Mike.
Morning.
So before we begin, I should mention that we invited a representative from Waymo to join us for this discussion. They asked who else was going to be on the program, and we never heard back from them. So I'm not sure what that says about our other guests here. Ashley, I believe the Charlotte Ledger was the first to report the arrival of these cars in Charlotte about a month or two ago, if I recall correctly. You found them in a parking lot near Bank of America Stadium. Did you just stumble on them, or did you know they were here and you were out searching for where they were?
Well, it's funny, Mike. I was actually on assignment in Uptown for something separate. We got wind that there was some chatter on the Charlotte Reddit about Waymo vehicles parked near the stadium. So while I was out and about, I decided to go check them out. They were all parked in the back of a lot near the stadium off McNinn Street. About a dozen Jaguar all-electric vehicles lined up with the Waymo logo printed on the side. There was a security guard in the lot that day. I went and went to go check them out. And I don't know if he was there specifically for the Waymo vehicles. But Waymo did make their official announcement the next day, saying that Charlotte was going to be their latest expansion market.
Sahil, you've written about these cars and about Waymo. Waymo is not a car. It is a technology that is built onto an existing automobile, and they use different brands, but right now in Charlotte they're using Jaguars. And among the company's slogans are these: the world's most experienced driver, never tired, never distracted, and same driver, different vehicle. From what you know of these cars, are any or all of those statements true when compared with the track record of these vehicles so far?
Yeah, you'll be shocked to hear that that marketers tend to exaggerate sometimes. But generally, I do think that Waymo has a fairly proven track record. Every self-driving car company has to report safety data to the government, and based on an independent analysis of crash data that I wrote about back in the fall, of the sort of like 45 most serious crashes that Waymo has been implicated in, the Waymo cars themselves were actually not definitively at fault in any of those crashes. So it was, you know, other human drivers who were at fault. So is Waymo perfect? No. Are Waymo cars probably safer than the average human driver? At this point, it seems like yes.
I want to delve into some of these slogans a little bit more fully later on in the program. Sridhar, Tesla allegedly has full driving technology available. I'm not sure they've completely rolled it out or that they are allowed to completely roll it out, but they do have You can put your hand on the wheel and the car will drive itself. If you put it on navigation, it will take the exit, it will change lanes for you, etc. Other brands can self-steer and they can change lanes too, etc. But how does Waymo's technology differ from that?
That's a very good question. So there is self-driving and there is self-driving, right? Tesla purely banks on having a commodity car with whatever cameras are there on the car and adds a bit of hardware and then manages everything in the software to actually drive them. Whereas if you look at Waymo or even some of the more established companies trying to break into this market, they equip their cars with lots of information. So for example, the Jaguar I-Pace has four LiDARs, which actually give like a 3D surrounding of the area, 13 cameras and six radars, and multiple more of these sound detecting devices. So again, there is just the infrastructure on this is much better. The other thing is that they also are deploying them in a much more structured way. So San Francisco and then in a few cities, now in Charlotte, they want to actually have like a deep understanding of the map in which they're traveling, understand the traffic scenarios that are encountered specifically in these cities. And then based on the data that they have, they want to slowly roll out more and more changes. The first few years, I'm not even sure whether they will directly allow riders in a full self-driving mode, because that in most of the other places, they had a backup driver. First, they were just riding around the street gathering the data, and then the backup driver, and only then it went to full self-autonomous mode. Whereas Tesla is probably the most path-breaking of these, in a sense that they'll just sell you the vehicle, and then there is a software upgrade, and you can apply the software upgrade to do full self-driving. But hey, they are not liable for any of the accidents or mishap that have been caused. You are on the hook for anything that happens to you while you are deploying the self-driving.
Yeah, because you're behind the wheel, whether the car is driving it itself or not. But there's nobody behind the wheel on Waymo, and we'll talk about that. And I also want to talk about a word you just used that people may not be familiar with, and that is LiDAR. Tesla does not use that. Other manufacturers do, but I'll come back to that in a second. Sahil, Tesla came out with their cars about the same time, I believe, as Google's technology, which is, I think whatever Google started has become this Waymo technology. Correct me if I'm wrong.
But yeah, they came out of. Go ahead. Yeah, Waymo was started as like a subsidiary of Google, which then became Alphabet. And it's still sort of under the Alphabet umbrella, but has a lot of autonomy in a way that, you know, other aspects of like, you know, Google Maps or Google Search or whatnot doesn't.
So these technologies came out at about the same time, but evidently Waymo has eclipsed Tesla. Is that deliberate? Is Tesla holding back? Why the difference? Why was one able to leapfrog ahead of the other?
Yeah, a couple things. So Waymo, as I mentioned, right, it has a huge beneficiary of you know, being able to be funded by Google and Alphabet. It's never really faced any profit incentive. So, you know,
But Elon Musk is the richest man in the world.
True. But when Waymo started in 2008, right, it was right. Tesla has always been a car company, right? Waymo was started more as a pet project of Google, and thus never really, you know, needed to make money. It was just sort of rich tech billionaires putting money into a vision and you know, seeing if it would pay off. Whereas Tesla, you know, because Tesla primarily sells cars to consumers, as Sridhar was talking about, you know, they never have put this LiDAR technology on their consumer vehicles. And they're, you know, they're selling you a software of full self-driving, as they call it, whereas Waymo, of course, is primarily a robo-taxi service. Hmm.
Ashley, Sridhar mentioned a second ago that when this first began, these cars, they had drivers behind the wheel just to keep track of what was going on, because they do train them on the streets of the cities in which they operate. And right now, I understand that's what's happening in Charlotte. There are drivers behind the wheels of these Waymo cars. They are not picking up passengers. They are learning our streets. What is there to learn? It's a street. There's a light. There's a curb. What is there to learn?
Well, Mike, you've driven around the streets of Charlotte. I would argue there's probably a lot for Waymo to learn about driving habits in Charlotte. I think it's interesting that Waymo actually picked Charlotte, and I don't know why the reason exactly, but I am wondering, it's very suburban, it's very sprawl, you know, traffic patterns are constantly changing with all the construction in our city. I'm wondering if this is an interesting kind of place for Waymo to learn how, you know, to learn not just in Charlotte, but for all of its kind of technology and software and capabilities. Right now, it's really circling most of Uptown and the neighborhoods around Uptown. I know I've seen them on Independence. I've seen them in Uptown. I've seen them kind of circling I-277. But eventually, the plan is for it to take on more streets of Charlotte and go regional.
How long have they been training these cars? How long will that period last? And when will they start offering this service to passengers?
Well, maybe someone else in the call has a better sense for other cities, but from what I can tell, it sometimes takes more than a year for Waymo in certain cities to be fully autonomous and for it to actually just be operating on its own. So again, maybe someone else in this call has a better sense of that for me, but it's not a short-term thing.
Sahil.
Yeah, we've seen this in a couple of cities now where Waymo starts to introduce and test its cars with human supervision, and then it takes quite some time to actually start picking up riders. I'm in New York, and a few months ago, I saw a Waymo with a human driver right outside my office, which is part of this testing they're doing in New York. And, you know, the service was supposed to come to New York, and now it's not. You know, there's been sort of regulatory hurdles, and we've seen that in Boston, we've seen that in DC, we've seen that in Minneapolis. This is definitely something that keeps happening again and again, where Waymo starts, you know, testing its cars, but then there's a huge, huge time lag until the service actually starts.
We're talking about the rollout of Waymo in Charlotte on Charlotte Talks this morning on WFAE. What exactly, Sahil, are they teaching these cars as they take them? I mean, because a street, I don't mean to oversimplify this, but a street is a street. I'm sure they have internal navigation like all these modern cars have. These cars have the ability to see stop signs, the ability to see traffic signals, etc. So, and they have the basic understanding of how to drive a car and when to turn a turn signal on. What are they teaching them in city to city to city?
Yeah, I think a helpful distinction between Waymo as an AI tool and a chatbot is say, you know, you ask ChatGPT to create you a poem about pizza in the tone of Shakespeare. I don't know, that's a hypothetical. And it'll do it, right? Like these chatbots can just spit things out. They're hallucinating sometimes. They're just making things up. It's word prediction. Waymo is not like that, right? It has to like have the road mapped to know what to do. And so by testing these cars, they're getting even more data, right, about, you know, what is X road like, you know, at night versus the day. You know, maybe there's some sort of weird construction that it's trying to, like, figure out. So it needs to test all these different roads in various cities to just, like, get a lay of the land and to, like, of course, like, make sure that it's, like, super safe as well.
There have been hiccups along the way in other cities. I want to talk about that when we come back, because there have been problems with school buses, particularly at least at one point. And they did a software recall and I guess reprogrammed these cars so that they would stop for stopped school buses. But why didn't it know that in the first place? So we'll talk about that when we come back, and the underlying technology of all this, because this is pretty fancy stuff that's going on beneath the hood of these cars. We'll do that, and we'll do it with the host, although we thought about doing the show without a host, because who needs hosts? We'll let artificial intelligence do it. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the arrival of Waymo driverless cars on the streets of Charlotte. They're being trained right now. The first people to discover that they were here were people at the Charlotte Ledger, and we have Ashley Faye, the managing editor of that publication, with us this morning, along with Sridhar Dugirala, who is an associate professor in the Department of Computer Science at UNC Chapel Hill, and Sahil Desai is a senior editor at The Atlantic. We have heard of problems with these Waymo vehicles in other cities, not stopping for school buses. And here in Charlotte, there was an accident on the first day of testing with a human being behind the wheel. It was described as a minor hiccup, Ashley, and the human described as a supervisor. Was he driving the car? Was he just behind the wheel, getting ready to take over if necessary? What's the story here?
From what I understand, that he was driving the vehicle like you would any other vehicle, and that's the current phase that Waymo is in Charlotte, is the human is fully in control of the vehicle.
But and it wasn't his fault, evidently.
No,
correct?
It was determined both by Waymo said this, and as well as the investigation into it, it was not the fault of the Waymo vehicle or the driver of the Waymo vehicle.
So, Sahil, Waymo claims that its self-driving technology is safer than human operators, and they cite data from more than 127 million miles of driving. Can you verify that claim?
Yeah. So it's tricky for two reasons. So in a top-line sense, like based on the experts that I've talked to, it does seem like it's fair to say that Waymo is probably safer than the average human driver. But to figure out exactly how much safer and what that really means is like maddeningly tricky for a few reasons, right? Like Waymo's cars in the cities in which they operate, you can only sort of like, they only operate in like pretty constrained areas, right? So in San Francisco, or you know, maybe LA is a better example. You can only pick it up in sort of a few neighborhoods, right? So if you want to like be in downtown and go to Santa Monica or something, you might not be able to go from one area of the city to another. And so that's because they're only operating in basically like the safest areas where they feel really comfortable. So you know, it's hard to know exactly what to make of the safety data in that regard. The other tricky thing is, right, you know, these Waymo cars are brand new vehicles, right? So if you're comparing the safety of, you know, a new car on the road that's like studded with safety features and cameras and whatnot versus, you know, a Toyota Corolla from 2002 that's been on the road for two decades, right? Those will be materially different. So the comparison here is quite difficult. Obviously, of course, as well, you know, the humans also range enormously in how good of drivers there are too. But on the whole, I think it's fair to say that number one, humans are truly terrible drivers. And number two, Waymo does seem to be doing a better job than that. But again, it's not saying much because, you know, as a species, we're great at lots of things. Driving is not one of them.
Well, we get distracted, and evidently computers allegedly don't get distracted. But I've had my computer do weird things all day that I can't explain, and it really bothers me. But it's not driving a car. It's just letting me read things. StreetArt, one of their slogans is same driver, different vehicle. Tesla, I know, stores up information from all of its owners' driving habits and puts it in the super neural network that is the cloud. And I guess the cars learn from each other somehow. Is that what's happening with these Waymo vehicles? Or do we assume that even though it's the same driver, different vehicle, it's getting all of its information from the cloud and learning from all the things that have been happening in these vehicles all over the country? Is that what's happening here?
So that and some more. So one of the reasons why, and this is true with most autonomous vehicle companies nowadays, they collect the data, which is the data that you or I drive. Say, for example, Waymo is deploying its fleet. So it collects all this data. But then you had a question as to what do they need to teach, right? What's happening when Waymo is driving is that they are collecting incredibly rich 3D maps of the environment. And what do they do with these maps? They will actually generate a lot more of virtual scenarios. So these are the scenarios that are never encountered in real life, but the Waymo underlying algorithm will say, oh, this is the behavior that I've seen a few times. Now let me try a few variations of this. What would happen if this passenger actually turned right instead of left at this intersection? What if I have an unprotected left, but the oncoming car came in fast or came in slow? And there are all these additional simulations that are run. Now, we have to be somewhat careful in assessing these, that I've driven a car in a simulation environment doesn't mean that it automatically translates to having a better car on the road, because a simulation environment in the end is a simulation environment. It's not, it is getting simulated LiDAR data, simulated camera data, but you don't know what we cannot hypothesize what did not happen based on some simulation, right? So they are careful about, so the simulation environment is used as a mere testing track for Waymo's understanding of how reliable they are, and that helps them in pushing boundaries in terms of, oh, can I get this into new intersection, or can I drive around a roundabout, which is way more difficult to negotiate dynamically.
You mentioned testing it in real world settings and being able to figure out the car being able to figure out what to do in various different situations. And there was a story this morning in the New York Times, not about the car moving, just about the car sitting at a light. And evidently, in San Francisco, there are some people who don't like the idea of these Waymo vehicles being on their roads. People can take advantage of a function to harass and threaten passengers, which happened, I think, in 2024. A San Francisco man tried covering the sensors of a self-driving car that had stopped, effectively disabling it while passengers were inside the car. And another video from that year showed three women screaming as a group of vandals tagged their car with spray paint. And the car wouldn't move. Well, there was another incident where a guy was hammering on the windows, banging on the windows, trying to get in, threatening to murder the passengers for having taken a robot-driven car. And the car won't move when there are people around it. And they called 911. And Waymo's support line, and Waymo told them it would not manually direct the car away if someone was standing nearby, and that the passengers would be okay if the doors were locked. Okay. Now, there's a unique situation. Have they planned adequately for that, do you think? And can you?
Yeah, I mean, these are situations for which you cannot just plan around, right? I think this was in the early days of the autonomous vehicle rollout. Everyone hypothesized that this would happen at some point of time. Mm-hmm. You can harass these cars. But, when I'm on the road and someone else is actually stopping me in front of my car, I'm scared to get down off my car and veer off as well, because I don't want to do anything wrong, right? So in that sense, the design decision makes definitely a lot of sense. Vandalism is against the law. You cannot harass things just because you don't like them. So I guess there is no perfect answer to this. The only way to do is some sort of community education or even driver education to say, okay, this is what you need to do in these instances. And so I cannot think of like a technical solution.
These cars are transmitting information that they're learning to the cloud, and the cloud is transmitting information back to the cars. And I'm wondering what happens if the cloud goes down, if the internet goes down. We've all experienced that. What happens if there's a power outage and the traffic lights aren't operating properly? What happens?
So this is actually a good question. The cars are architected in a way that they are not fully dependent on any external network or external power source. So they have enough battery, compute, and sensor data that they can manage on their own without any of these interruptions for quite some time. So So if the internet goes down, it goes down. The reason why Waymo is somewhat careful in rolling out these is that they want to design a vehicle that can operate even without internet in these specific pockets. So, yeah.
There are rules of the road, but the rules of the road change from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I'm just wondering how it knows the rules. I mean, some places you can turn right on red, Other places, you can't. In some places, traffic lights are strung on a wire across the intersection. In other places, like Washington, D.C., they're on a pole on the curb. So how do these cars see these lights? How do they know them? How do they know the speed limit? How do they know?
So this is what exactly is getting taught in the first year or so of human driving. The reason why they take so much time is that they are collecting all of these information. And again, most of these is actually done offline. That is, our GPSs work by sending some sort of a signal to the network and then it gets updated. But the GPS or positioning system on these cars, they have actually a map of their environment, which is very, very dense. So the knowing part happens in some sort of offline training where they give these, have you had any place where you have to validate that you're a human and it asks, tick all the boxes where there are traffic lights or tick all the boxes that are there of bicycles. That is actually the training data that is used to train these autonomous vehicles to detect these traffic lights in many, many more situations. So the first year Waymo actually drives the car around, gets extremely high quality information about the neighborhood. And one of the reasons why traffic cones or any changes spook it out is because it's out of what it has been trained on.
Charlotte keeps changing everything. We keep putting in bike lanes. There's always construction. And any city, there's always construction because cities are never done. At one point, Charlotte was the city of orange traffic barrels. And do these cars understand what all these things mean? Because even if you train them this week, next week, it may change.
Yeah, that's a good question. And maybe that's why they want to test it out. So there are a few universals, right? Like the universal being traffic cone is in this color and it has a specific shape. We don't see traffic cones that are like rainbow color tomorrow on the streets. So, and that the even the type of barricades that people put in for construction, these are standard equipment. So the Waymo has some training data which identifies these, but for majority of them, for say traffic behaviors, and especially in instances where there's a human managing the traffic manually, telling something to go front or go turn this way, that would be much more trickier scenarios for Waymo, I would assume.
In January, Sahil, Waymo volunteered information to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration about one of its cars striking a pedestrian in Santa Monica. I suppose it is to their credit that they volunteered this information to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. But the fact that it happened seems to weaken a bit their claim that they are safer than cars with drivers. Would that be correct?
This is what I find so interesting and confusing about thinking about this technology, because the answer, in my opinion, is both yes and no, right? In a sense, of course, it's terrible that that this Waymo struck a kid. But the counterfactual is also so difficult to think through, right? How would a human have managed that situation? It's not clear that a human would have handled that situation better, right? The Waymo car, I believe, went from something like 17 miles per hour to 6 miles per hour really quickly, right? And it's, you know, it's very possible to imagine a human driver who was slightly distracted on their cell phone and wouldn't have seen that kid coming until it was too late. Mm.
In North Carolina, Ashley, when a Waymo has an accident or it causes a human injury or it causes death, who is responsible and how is that responsibility determined?
That's a good question, Mike. And since we're kind of in the early phase here, and right now humans are driving the vehicle, I would assume during this phase, the human is responsible if they are found to be at fault.
But ultimately.
Right. But based on from what I understand from the 2017 law that passed in North Carolina, the operator of the vehicle, so I know that Waymo has some remote maybe assistance or people who are kind of dispatched to step into a situation. I don't know if they would be considered at fault. I'm actually not really quite sure of the answer to that. I don't know if Sahil, you would know, but from what I understand, the operator of the vehicle would be at fault, but we're not at a phase yet where they're fully autonomous.
We're talking about Waymo's arrival in Charlotte on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Sahil, how are these different states, municipalities, et cetera, handling this? Are they taking that into consideration? Have they already come up with rules and regulations regarding responsibility in case of an accident?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, Waymo, the company, is at fault. We are seeing, you know, in some instances, just confusion, specifically at the local level, about how to figure out responsibility. So in one instance, a police officer in California stopped a Waymo and tried to give it a ticket, but there's no button to check on the ticket form for a robot. So the police officer didn't know what to do. So this is like an example of how we're, you know, in the early days of robo taxis. It's sort of the Wild West, right? We're sort of figuring out things as it comes and goes. But, you know, on the whole, Waymo is responsible, right? So, you know, for example, like there was an earlier robotaxi company called Cruise that was owned by General Motors that pretty spectacularly was involved in a crash in San Francisco in which its car malfunctioned and dragged a pedestrian under the car for about 20 feet. And she was, you know, pretty seriously injured. And the company itself was at fault and ended up essentially just being shuttered. So we've seen this again and again where, you know, this has happened with Tesla a few times too, when its full self-driving technology malfunctions, that it's, you know, it's sued or by you know, consumers or implicated in investigations by the government, that the company ultimately is at fault.
I only have about 30 seconds left, but is this any different, really, when you come right down to it, than early automobiles in the early 1900s, before the rules of the road had really been established? Is this really any different? And if it isn't, why haven't they thought of this?
In the same way that the early days of cars were thought of as horseless carriages, mm-hmm. I think this is the era of driver taxis, driverless cars that we're in now.
I want to talk a little bit more about the technology underlying these Waymo robotic cars and what LiDAR is and what it enables these cars to do. And we'll do that when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Waymo driverless cars being tested on the streets of Charlotte. We're joining a list of other cities that have these things already operational in fully automatic mode. And we're talking about it with Sahil Desai. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic, Ashley Fahey, managing editor of the Charlotte Ledger, and Sridhar Dagirala, associate professor in the Department of Computer Science at UNC Chapel Hill. Sridhar, Tesla's used something called autopilot, which allows the driver to allows the car to drive itself in certain situations, and the latest versions of this software allow these cars to see stop signs, and I believe they can read stoplights and respond accordingly. Other companies with cars that self-drive themselves use something called LiDAR, which I believe is part of the underlying technology of these Waymos. Talk to me about what LiDAR is. Is it radar? What is it?
So LiDAR is an interesting technology that was that eventually got popular. So actually, it is used by archaeologists and excavationists to find interesting artifacts deep in the ground. But to put it simply, the camera works at a principle of there is light that bounces onto an object and reaches the sensor of the camera, and that records what color is expressed at a particular place. LiDAR works slightly differently. It actually shoots laser rays, which are very, very low intensity. Again, if you are in the vicinity, your eyes will not get hurt by getting a LiDAR. So it shoots different laser pulses at different angles. So the laser pulse actually bounces back and comes to the sensor. That actually gives an idea of how far is an object from the specific sensor. So instead of a passive sensing environment like a camera, which actually relies on some sort of sunlight to actually give you the light, LiDAR actually is a source of the light itself, and it actually records a much richer environment in terms of where are the objects placed. So that's the 3D. It actually gives you 3D images instead of just the 2D images.
So it would be accurate to say that it doesn't matter whether the car is operating in daytime or nighttime, whether there's streetlights or no streetlights, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so for LiDAR, it doesn't matter whether there are streetlights or no streetlights.
So are Waymos using a combination of LiDAR and actual cameras, or is it just depending on this LiDAR technology?
So it actually uses LiDAR cameras and radars as well. Radar actually sends out some electromagnetic pulses to actually detect some distance. These work very well to detect metallic objects. Like if there's a car in front of you, you send the radar, you'll get to know.
And Teslas are built from the ground up to be electric cars and to be able to be, if you want to pay extra for it, to use this self-driving technology. But Waymo is retrofitting cars. In Charlotte, they're using Jaguars, which are meant to be normal cars. They're not meant to drive themselves. What kind of added hardware do they have to put on these cars to make them able to talk to the software and respond to it?
Yeah, very good question. So first is you need all the compute. So first, the Jaguar has some onboard computer, but that is necessary for running the small entertainment and some of the fuel control. But Waymo brings its own entire software stack. So it needs additional compute hardware for just deploying and running the software stack. Then it actually fits on 13 different cameras. So there are cameras on the Jaguar in itself, but those are not explicitly used by Waymo. Waymo actually has its own package of how to design these. It has 13 cameras, 4 LiDARs, and 6 radars. And again, many more sensors that actually detect the sound. So for example, you can actually detect a person or a pedestrian based on some other sound, right? Like the people are talking, so you can detect something else, yeah.
As Sahil, as artificial intelligence rolls out, there have been a lot of discussions about how quickly it's moving, how unregulated it is, how concerned the inventors of this software, the tech bros, are taking this software and in terms of what it can do and what it will do to society, because technology people tend to move very quickly and they don't seem to have a great track record of caring about the debris they leave in their wake. Are the people working on this technology more careful? Do they feel a greater sense of responsibility? Is there any reason to believe that?
The short answer is no. I think Waymo or Tesla more acutely, like any other tech company, you know, wants to move really quickly and rule the world. That's the end game of Silicon Valley. Elon Musk, you know, he's moving really quickly to introduce self-driving cars and is, you know, if it all goes according to plan, he'll make a gajillion dollars, right? I think what's unique about self-driving cars compared to chatbots, for example, is that these companies are even more incentivized to be extremely safe, right? If a chatbot goes wrong, you know, you might not hear about it, right? You might not hear about someone who asks for a travel itinerary to Paris and you know, is told to go visit the Colosseum, right? Like that's, you know, that's a hallucination, but you might not hear about it. It's also low stakes, right? But if a driverless car malfunctions, you know, there are lives on the line, right? You know, these cars are they're like thousands of pounds and they're traveling like 50 miles per hour. The stakes are much higher. So, you know, these companies are incentivized to go slower and prioritize safety in that regard. You know, it is a business decision fundamentally that they have to prioritize safety in a way that, you know, chatbot companies, OpenAI, Anthropic, what have you, they don't.
And even though these artificial intelligence and other tech companies apparently are, at least in this country, relatively unregulated, these vehicles are operating in a highly regulated environment. Is that tempering some of the chances that we might be taking with these vehicles were those regulations not in place?
For sure. I think, you know, one thing we're definitely seeing, you know, so in a basic regard, you know, these companies have to report safety and crash data to the government, which goes a long way. But secondly, we're also seeing a lot of states, cities, municipalities implementing their own regulations. So, you know, one thing we've seen is lots of primarily blue cities really slow walk Waymo, and they're being very, very intentional about whether to let Waymo let Waymo pick up riders. So, you know, what's starting to emerge is almost like a pretty stark red and blue state divide on driverless cars, and particularly Waymo. So, you know, most recently, Waymo just launched in Dallas, San Antonio, and, you know, in a few cities in Florida as well, right? So, you know, red states, right? Whereas, you know, as I had mentioned, Waymo had announced its intentions to launch in Boston, D.C., and New York, but, you know, local government is proving to be an impasse. So we're seeing lots of blue cities and blue states really sort of implement regulations around Waymo, while red states and purple states are welcoming robo-taxis much more quickly.
I want to talk a little bit more about that. But Ashley, we're a blue city, and yet we're getting these Waymo vehicles. And that is because we have no control over this, correct?
That's right. Yeah, that House Bill 469 I referenced, which passed in 2017, so almost a decade ago, actually does not allow local ordinances to regulate or restrict autonomous vehicles. Now, this bill was passed kind of as a preemptive measure before AVs were really being tested here. And there is a committee as part of NCDOT that meets several times a year to kind of review the sort of regulation at the state level of AVs. So I'm very curious now that Waymo is moving into Charlotte, if that is going to be looked at.
Well, is this the law there? I think there are two laws. Is this the law that was passed in 2017 and signed by then Governor Roy Cooper, a Democrat, even though it was passed by a Republican legislature? You're saying, you're nodding yes. Is this one of the incredibly few incidences of law, legislation being out front of technology? Because this is 2017. These cars didn't exist.
I think that's a good question, and maybe someone else who's studied this elsewhere has a better answer. But, you know, I do think a lot of, you know, governments in North Carolina, or the North Carolina state government, rather, was trying to get ahead of this, knowing it is such a high stakes thing, to Sahil's point earlier. It involves people's lives. It involves so many things, so many variables. So I think they were just trying to get ahead of it. But this is such a fast changing thing, whether it's AI more generally or more specifically around vehicles, that you wonder if even that 2017 law even makes sense in 2026.
Why, Sahil, why are red states more prone to adopting and allowing this technology than blue states, or red cities versus blue cities? Because in some places, the states control this. In other places, municipalities control this.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of reasons. I mean, primarily, it's, you know, just a general sort of, you know, political divide on regulation, right? Republicans are more against regulation. Democrats want more regulation. But I think, you know, there's also a pretty stark, you know, labor aspect to this. We've seen both in New York and Boston now, Democrats specifically sort of fretting about the potential labor concerns of letting Waymo and robo-taxis enter their cities. You know, I think there's understandably a bit of consternation about how to be thinking about robo-taxis, especially after you know what Uber and Lyft have done to the taxi industry. You know, then now there's concern that, you know, a taxi driver who now is a gig worker for Uber might just, you know, lose their job entirely if robo-taxis take over. And, you know, specifically Democrats aligned with unions, the Teamsters in particular, have come out very strongly against Waymo. So we're seeing Democrats sort of slow walk Waymo for that reason as well.
How are these cars, these Waymo cars, in the cities where they've been operating autonomously, how are they being received by riders and other drivers, Sahil?
I would say it's a mixed bag. I think that Waymos have become a really like clear way to indicate your own like disapproval or hatred of Silicon Valley and the tech industry, because there's such a like a visceral way to, see technology and the future of AI. Here is a car that literally drives itself on the road. So, as you mentioned, we've seen people vandalize these cars. We've seen in a few instances actually these cars being like set on fire. It's been very really like, intense. I think on the whole, like, for as much as people hate them, there's also been, lots of people who love them, right? If you go to San Francisco, there's lots of reporting about how riding in a Waymo is like as much of the like tourist experience as, trying sourdough bread. Right? That's just it's just
Or riding a
part of
streetcar.
the appeal now.
Yeah.
And I think we're also seeing we're seeing lots of drivers also being just a bit like cautious around Waymos, right? Waymos really like closely hew to the speed limit in the way that human drivers don't. And in some instances, we've seen drivers just being confused by that, where like, if someone's going 45 and a 30, right? And that's just like how the traffic goes, a Waymo will go the speed
30.
limit. And
Yeah.
sometimes drivers have been confused by that.
Or angered by it.
Yeah.
When cars first came along, people were afraid of them because there was no horse in front of the carriage. When telephones came along, a lot of people kind of eschewed that technology because it was scary technology. As these cars become more ubiquitous and as more people have used them in other cities where they are operating, is any fear, any reluctance evaporating? Are they picking up steam? In other words, are more people saying, well, I'll get a Waymo, as opposed to, well, let me call an Uber?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're seeing specifically in San Francisco that Waymo is already sort of operating more rides as Lyft. And so, like it's really like taking off. There's been reports of new parents taking their newborns from the hospital in a Waymo, of parents letting their teens come back from soccer practice in a Waymo. Like, this is a real technology. It's not a gimmick.
Ashley, this is a city full of young people who are tech savvy. Have you been able to talk to any of them about their anticipation of using these vehicles? Are they excited about it? Have they said anything about it at all?
Mike, it's been really an interesting mixed bag because some of the folks you wouldn't expect seem to be more excited. Like some of the older people I've spoken with are actually maybe more excited about the technology, and some of the Gen Zers who, of course, are mostly upper teens and 20s now, actually have some hesitancy from just some of my informal talking to people about this so far. So it's really a mixed bag. A lot of people say, "Oh, Charlotte drivers are already so terrible. How much worse could a Waymo be?" But then you have the thought process of, I don't know if I trust this. I've heard the headlines around Waymo being involved in these accidents, and I don't know if I want to get into a car like that.
We have an e email question. Any safeguards from sophisticated hackers wanting to mess with the cars just for, quote, fun, Sridhar?
Yeah, so this is actually an ongoing active research area in computer security. So there is something, so I think that there have been people who demonstrated that just by knowing some of the details of the vehicle, they could actually remote operate a car. And again, this actually is very scary. But you should also trust some of these big tech companies, or at least companies that have a lot of technical expertise in defending against some security threats. Yeah.
There is some conversation, Sahil. I only have 30 seconds, but there's some conversation about these Waymos being the wave of the future, that eventually we'll all have nothing but these cars. No one will buy a car. We'll just call a Waymo and it will drive us to where we want to go. Is that a reality? Do you think that'll become a reality?
Maybe in a long time, but the average car on the road is about a decade old. Things move very, very
Slow.
slowly. So, we're stuck with human drivers for the foreseeable future.
Sahil Desai is a senior editor at The Atlantic. Sridhar Dagirala is an associate professor in the Department of Computer Science at UNC Chapel Hill. And Ashley Fahey, who discovered Waymos in Charlotte, is the managing editor of the Charlotte Ledger. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.